The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for Friday, August 1st. My name's Dan Wimmish. I'm the editor of the Tarlhurst End, a Reading fan site and blog. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by the Reading Post, Charles Watts. Charles, how are you?
Yes, I'm very good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. The World Cup is in the rearview mirror. Players are back in pre-season training. Games are taking place and the big kickoff is less than 2 weeks ago. So there's a lot to be excited about on the Reading front.
It certainly is. Yeah, I think we all enjoyed the World Cup, didn't we? It was exciting. There was take England out of that. It was exciting, and we saw plenty of goals. But I think we're all ready to get back to good old domestic football now.
Back to the bread and butter, really, of the Championship. I said less than 2 weeks ago, we got one big pre-season friendly left to go. That's Swansea tomorrow at the Medeci Stadium, and then yeah, we'll be off to Wigan, and to start on nil points because I don't care if we'd signed half the world, we never seem to do well at Wigan.
Well, I don't think we can do any worse than we did last season, and a quite abject performance up there towards the end of the campaign. So yeah, hopefully we can improve on that and maybe scrape a point. I'm not expecting three on the opening day, I have to say.
Come on to that game a little bit later on, but in the meantime, it's dominated this podcast since we started it. That is the takeover. Now, when we spoke last, it looked like Samrit and Tikisada had taken pole position. It looked like the takeover was going to go through and everything seemed hunky-dory. But as has been the case with this takeover since day one, there's been twists and turns. And finally, Reading Football Club themselves have come out with a statement with no mention of Mr. Bunty Kisada. There is a new player in the fold, and I'm struggling to pronounce her name as much as Samrit's. I'm going to go for Kunying Sasima. Have I got that right, Charles?
I think you've got that right. I can't say that I'm the sort of the verse of it all. I think that's the name I'm going by, Kunying Sasima Srifkorn. But I think we can drop the Kunying and just call her Sasima, as that's the name on the back of her shirt that she's holding up very happily with Sir John in the photo.
37, isn't it? Something along those lines. I don't know if that number means anything, but I'm going to Sasima.
I think it does mean something in Thailand, yeah. But I'm not exactly sure what it is.
So how has this come about and what does this mean for the takeover going forward?
Well, I mean, Sasima has been around for a while, I've got to say. She's been, I've long been mooted at this. At first, it was a sort of mysterious woman in her 70s who was as part of the Thai consortium. She was at the stadium a fair amount in the last sort of month or so. She's been staying there. And obviously, yeah, they've pushed her forward as the lead. Obviously, Samrit has been around for a lot longer than Sasima. Certainly his name's been in the media a lot longer than Sasima. And at first, Samrit was certainly the lead guy and was trying to, it was, you know, there was a consortium involved, but Samrit was certainly the lead guy. I think things have changed. I think once his lawyers signed the original sale and purchase agreement, there's certainly been trouble getting the necessary finance from Thailand to England. I think there was, yeah, and it seems to have become apparent that maybe other people needed to be involved as well as Samrit. Maybe he didn't have the finance available. You know, we don't really know. It's impossible to really find out exactly how much people are worth and who's got what cash lying around. So basically, he is involved. There's no way he's not involved. He's certainly not named yesterday by the football club, but he's involved. He's one of the key players in this. They've put Sasima forward as the lead. Last I'd heard was that there was in fact four who were going to have an equal share. So it's quite interesting that they've pushed her forward as someone who's leading the consortium. So, you know, we'll have to see how that pans out, and I'll see what else I can find out in the coming days. But certainly, Reading are certainly pushing her forward, obviously, as the lead, the head of this consortium. But it's good to hear from them, isn't it? From Reading, we've been waiting an awful...
Absolutely, the silence is deafening.
I know, we've been waiting an awful long time. We even heard from the Thais earlier this week, themselves came out and put a little bit of a statement out. It didn't really say anything, but at least we heard from them. And I think that hearing from them made Reading's silence sound even louder. But they've obviously taken the decision now to do it. I was quite surprised, I've got to say, that they came out, because the noise that I'd heard from the club was nothing was going to come out until the Football League tests had been passed. So I was a bit surprised when suddenly this came out yesterday. I have a feeling that it might have been something to do with, obviously, another player in the game, but who was part of that, well, not part of the American group, but certainly sided with the American group, had obviously been talking to the Daily Telegraph more frequently recently, and something came out yesterday as well, didn't it? In the morning, and I do wonder if Reading have took the step to sort of make a statement, just to quieten those noises that suddenly seem to be appearing in the Telegraph and seem to be stirring the pot a little bit. And so I think
so. That's exactly how the Anton Zingarevic story first came out, wasn't it? There was due to be a report in a national newspaper, and Reading sort of jumped the gun and managed to get themselves out there and get their voice across. So
yeah, it certainly seems like I said, I was surprised that they came out and said it yesterday. There was no suggestion that this was going to happen. I'd always heard they'd always stuck to the line, if we're not saying anything, we're waiting until everything's done, we're waiting until the Football League test's done. So to suddenly come out of it, spring it, completely surprised yesterday, late on a Thursday evening, right on deadline as well, which was good of them, makes me think that maybe it was something to do with just to quieten the headlines which were beginning to appear in the national press.
Have you got any sort of idea on the motives of this group? I mean, obviously we're all hoping they're friendly in the back in their heads. They've always been lifelong football fans, although that didn't work out well with Mrs. Zingari. Anything from them in terms of why this investment's coming?
Not really. I mean, there is a background in football there. Even Sasima, sort of her family has a bit of a background. I think her daughter is a president of Bangkok FC. And obviously, Samrit is very much involved in football, and he loves his football. He's a huge fan. He's got a team in the Thai Premier League, obviously Police United. So there is a football side of things. I believe that Robert Tan, another guy who's involved in it, I think he may be more to do with the hotel part of the deal, because obviously this deal buys a football club, but it's also buying the hotel. And I think he might be sort of focusing on that side of the deal. It remains to be seen what happens with Samrit, how much he's going to be pushed into the limelight, because I also noticed the fact his name wasn't mentioned at all. Again, his name is the one who's been bandied around, certainly in the Telegraph, and trying to stir the pot in terms of Football League directors' tests. And I've been told, I'm not entirely, you know, I don't know exactly how much truth there is in it, that certain people who are involved in other bids have certainly been sort of trying to blacken Samrit's name in terms of the Football League and possible tests that are coming up. So again, the fact that he's not mentioned in this deal for now, or in this statement for now, doesn't really surprise me. I think they're probably trying to take him out of the limelight a little bit, because I do understand there's a few sort of slurs or rumours or whatever has been pushed forward in terms of his name to the Football League. So I suppose we'll have to see when he does come out of the limelight and if he is put forward. Until these guys sit in front of us at a press conference, it's going to be very hard to know the answers to these questions. And I'm really looking forward to that press conference, because it's certainly going to be an exciting one. There's an awful lot we want to know.
And I guess the most pressing question of all from Reading fans is, just when exactly do we expect this all to be wrapped up? Is this going to drag on throughout the start of the season, or could we? Is the end in sight?
Well, I think the end is in sight, but I can't put a date on it. I have no idea how the Football League works for this. Obviously, everything's with them. It's nailed down to the league, and they don't give a time frame. They never do, in how long this can last. I mean, if you talk to Sheffield Wednesday fans, they're a highly frustrated bunch at the moment. They're takeover was going well, it was announced 6 weeks ago, I think, wasn't it, and that still hasn't been ratified by the Football League yet. Why that is, I have no idea, but you know, that's obviously dragged on. I don't think any of us want this to go on for another 6 weeks, because obviously the transfer window shuts in a lot less time than that. I think we're down to about 4 weeks now, so hopefully we're going to get a quick end to it. But you know, I wouldn't want to put a time frame on it, because I just honestly don't know where that it just rests with the Football League.
Yeah, 31 days to go left in that window, and having been more than 300 days since the signing, it would be nice to see some fresh faces around. But I guess we have seen a few fresh faces in terms of younger players that have made an impact in this pre-season, Ryan Edwards being the chief among them. You've seen a lot of these pre-season games running so far. The results may not have been, you know, stellar. They're not putting fives and six past teams like Stevenage and whatnot. But what have your impressions of the pre-season been so far?
I think they've been all right. I mean, it's certainly not, there's been no real massive eye-catching result. Like, obviously, I thought the Wigan game was good. I thought Reading thoroughly dominated that game. Played some good stuff going forward. That could have comfortably been a 5-0 game. It wasn't. It was just two, but I thought they played well. Exeter, I mean, these sort of games, it was quite tough, because it's very much 45 minutes, 45 minutes. You know, one team playing the first half, one team playing the second half. For the first half at Exeter, they were well on top, comfortably leading 1-0 at the break, deservedly so. And then they changed things around second half, and it was a bit, they were hanging on a little bit there, and Exeter could have levelled. Stevenage on Tuesday night was a shocker. It was just a really poor game of football. It was very physical. A decent workout from that regard, and obviously a big step up in terms of fitness. A lot of players played 90 minutes, but it wasn't a very good game at all. It wasn't pretty. Stevenage certainly set out to disrupt Reading and get stuck in, and they certainly did that. And unfortunately, for Hal Robson-Kanu, he's now going to miss the start of the season because of it. But I thought there's been some decent performances. Ryan Edwards, you mentioned there, I thought he's been just a huge bonus. You know, stuff none of us expected. We all knew of him. Well, I certainly knew of him, but I'd never seen him play. I had absolutely no idea what to expect from him. Wasn't expecting him to, you know, really feature so heavily during pre-season, but needs must, obviously. And he seized his chance. He's been put in there and he's absolutely seized his chance to be in fantastic. Very good goal up at Exeter. Brilliant cross for Pogge at Yeovil. Again, very clever ball in for Jake at Wickham. And he's just an exciting player for me. He looks like a footballer. He's always on the ball. He's always looking for spaces. The ball seems to be drawn to him. Wherever it is, he's there. And, you know, I don't want to put too much pressure on him thinking he's going to be this world beater or anything like that. But he's just a really big bonus. He's a player we all knew about, but didn't really... We knew about him, but we didn't know about him, if you know what I mean. And he's just seized his opportunity, much like Jordan Abita did last summer. And if he can go on and nail down his place in the starting 11 now, and I hate that phrase, it could be like a new signing. Being an Arsenal fan, I've heard Arsene Wenger say it countless times, and it really winds me up. But it could be like a new signing. It's a player who's just suddenly thrust into the squad and could be a really key man this season.
And just finally on the pre-season front, I noticed comments in the paper today, Nigel Atkins really talking up Jake Taylor.
Yeah, I thought Jake was very good at Wickham. He was good in the first half at Yeovil. He's playing more on the left-hand side of a midfield three at the moment. He's sort of linking up well with Jordan. He took his goal really well at Wickham. I was delighted he scored that goal because he missed a few chances and you could see he was desperate to get one. He was desperate to get one. And so I was really happy he scored that. His last touch of the game as well. As soon as he turned around, he was getting dragged off as the whole team were. And he's had a very good, strong pre-season. I think the coming of age for Jake might end up being that Doncaster game at the end of last season when he came off the bench and set up the goal for Pav. And I don't know if it just turned him sort of confidence-wise. It took him up another notch. But he certainly seems to really put it in this pre-season. And I think he'll certainly be starting at Wigan. I really can't see any way he won't be because of injuries. So he's got a real chance now. He's got an opportunity. And much like Ryan Edwards, he's certainly taken it so far in pre-season. And, you know, he's a Reading lad. He's been here since eight. We've all heard the story. And it'd just be great if he could really sort of nail his place down in the team this year.
Absolutely. Seeing younger players come through is one of the few things that I'm actually excited about going into this season. And on the slightly negative front, you did mention the injury to Hal Robson-Kanu. He's one of a number of walking wounded. Danny Williams, Danny Guthrie, Gareth McCleary, amongst players, and Jerem Karachan as well, that are all not quite fit. How many are we expecting to see at Wigan and beyond that?
Well, honestly, none. The only one I think who could make it is Danny Guthrie, but every time I ask Nigel about Danny Guthrie, it's always touch and go for Saturday, touch and go for Tuesday, yet he never seems to appear. So he hasn't played a single minute in pre-season yet. And you think he must be so far behind teammates in terms of fitness, even if he is suddenly available for tomorrow. I mean, I can't see him getting any more than half an hour at the end of the game if he is available. And I don't know if he is. So I can't imagine him starting at Wigan. So I don't think any of those key players are going to be around. Jem... If Jem was offered the chance, he probably would play at Wigan, but he's been desperate to play through pre-season. He was hassling to get 20 minutes at Exeter for the first game, but obviously the staff are having none of it and completely easing him back in. I don't think we'll see Jem much before September. Gareth McCleary, I understand it could be 3 or 4 months until we see Gareth McCleary. I'm not sure on Danny Williams. So I mean, you talk of those players, then they're all key men, they're all starters, and you can't think we're not going to see any of them at Wigan, and we might not see any of them almost for the first half of this season. Certainly Gareth McCleary, I'd be happy if we see him before December, but I don't think we will.
It's a real blow, as you mentioned. I mean, with the squad not having reinforcements, those are really big players and difference makers, and to not have those, it is leaving us thin on the ground. But I suppose, as you mentioned, it gives a chance for the likes of Ryan Edwards, the Nick Blackmans of this world, Hope Akpan maybe, to all step up and you know, show what they can do. So I at least imagine spirit within the squad has got to be pretty high, because, you know, you're all in it together. And
yeah, the spirit's great. I mean, Nigel Atkins, he's long, you know, whatever interview you hear, you'll always hear him say, oh, training's been brilliant, spirit's great. But he's taken it up a notch this summer. I don't know if that's because he's sort of generating a back-to-the-wall mentality, because obviously things haven't quite gone the club's way with players leaving and a small squad. And he certainly seems to be trying to build that mentality up, and every player is going along with it. Everyone I speak to said this is the best it's ever been. Obviously, Royston Drennett has been taken out of the group this summer, which I think may have helped in terms of attitude. It certainly may have helped in terms of training and how good it is, because I don't think Royston's the best trainer at all. And I think when sort of exercises are going on, when practice matches are going on, I think things tend to break down when Royston's involved, because he just doesn't train at the same level. He doesn't hit the same heights in terms of fitness. And I think it seems to have made a big difference, Royston not being involved. And the squad just seems a happy place. It really does. It did. I'm not saying it didn't last year, because I thought it did, but it certainly seems, in the players that I've been around, been down the training ground, been at games, before games, after games, there is a real mentality here of that it's going to be a tough season here, but we're all in it together. And I think Reading are going to need that, because it is going to be a very difficult season. There's going to be a lot of young players, some of whom have never even played in senior football before, may have to get thrown into the deep end. And so everyone's going to have to play for each other. Everyone's going to have to play as a team. And I think if Reading are going to have a remotely successful season this season, they need every single one of that squad to be at it and to be together.
Have you heard any whispers about clubs interested in Royston or any other Reading player?
No, not Royston, I have to say. I mean, he keeps mentioning Fynald on his Instagram, but I'd be very surprised if Fynald came in for him. I mean, he's been available for an awful long time now. He was available throughout January. He's available now. He's trying to find a club. His agent's trying to find a club. Reading are trying to find a club. No one's found anyone yet. I think his wages are obviously very good. He doesn't, you know, he's under no, he doesn't have to throw up his, sort of rip up his contracts and walk away. He doesn't, you know, he's entitled to take his money. That's what he signed a contract for. So it's going to be very tough to shift Royston. I'm sure he'll probably want to play football, but if you're getting paid very good money and you're guaranteed it for one more year, it's, you know, you just know what footballers are like. They're going to tend to take the money. And so I'll be surprised if we see Royston go, certainly on a permanent deal. Maybe they might be able to get him out on loan and share some of the wages, but I think we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Anybody else? Any other whispers of ins or outs, I suppose?
Well, there was a lot of interest in Gareth McCleary over the summer. I think the injury has certainly stopped that happening. I know Gareth's happy at Reading. I think he'd love to put pen to paper and sign a new deal, but he's obviously only got a year left on his contract, so clubs are going to note that and could get him at a fairly cheap price. Same with Alex McCarthy, but Arsenal were very interested in Alex, but have opted to go elsewhere. Swansea were interested in Alex, but have also opted to go elsewhere. So you're kind of limited in clubs at the moment about where Alex would go. I have to say, I was convinced he'd be gone by now. You sort of look at what possible suitors there are out there. Southampton have been mentioned, but I know they've got a very strong interest in Fraser Forster up at Celtic. And we'll be trying to push that deal through before the transfer window shuts, especially now as it looks like Celtic are out of the Champions League. You've got to feel that Southampton are in a good position to try and get him. And so you start wondering what possible clubs are there for Alex. So he might end up staying, which, you know, it's a good thing in one way because he's a very good goalkeeper, but you've got to think he's a sellable asset. Feds is a top goalkeeper, completely capable of being the number one goalkeeper again. And McCarthy's only got a year left in his contract, and I can't see any way that he's going to sign a new one. So Reading have got to face up to losing him on a free at the end of this season. So I think I wouldn't say that Reading would be too upset if McCarthy went, but it's whether a club comes in for him. So we'll just have to wait and see.
And sadly, I guess it's a forlorn hope that there's any transfer rumours in.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see any way that anything's going to happen until the Football League gives the ratification. Just because if say the Ties put up the money and sign a few players, and then suddenly their takeover is not confirmed, then where that money's going to have to be paid back, isn't it, by the club? And so I just can't see that there's any way that that anything will happen until the Football League gives the green light. I know that the Ties are certainly very keen to bring players in. I know they've. It sounds to me like they've been shortlisting players that they may want. I think there have been discussions with Nick Hammond. So, you know, I don't think they'll be starting from scratch. I think they'll know who they want. They'll know how much they're going to have to pay to get certain players. And it's just a case of waiting for the green light to actually go out and start spending. So hopefully if it comes in 2 weeks, you know, there's still a fortnight left of the transfer window then. And I would expect players to come in. I know I've heard talk from certain sources that 4 or 5 players are on the shortlist to come in, but you know, we're running out of time now, aren't we? So they may be on the shortlist, but whether it's possible, we'll have to wait and see.
The late Tommy Burns managed to pull off 7 signings in one day for Reading, so
famous day.
The magnificent 7. Hopefully, the players that we sign this summer will be slightly better quality and last a bit longer.
I have to say, as well, we're talking about transfers. I think also very important with this deal going through is getting players who are entering the final year of their contracts tied down as well. I think that's equally as important for Reading. I've obviously mentioned Alex McCarthy there. But you've also, I mean, there's a whole host and very key players. Obviously.
I think it's only really Sean Morrison that's established first team players that is actually locked down. Is it maybe Danny Williams?
Jordan Abita as well. Obviously, he signed a new one at the same time as Sean, didn't he? I think you look at it, you've got the captain. The new captain is out of contract at the end of this season. The vice captain is out of contract at the end of this season. Alex Pearce is out of contract. Gareth McCleary. I mean, it's
all the goalkeepers, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really, you look at it, last year was quite big, quite a bad one, but they were all sort of coming towards the end of their careers. People like Joby, Ledge, Caspers. This year it's very different. You've got players in mid-20s who are coming to the end of their contracts. And, you know, it's very, very important. Just for me, as important as bringing new players in is getting some of these guys signed down, because you don't want 6 or 7 of this lot leaving for free next summer.
Nigel Atkins needs to, after 18 months of the job, needs to finally be able to start thinking at the club rather than putting, you know, band-aids and trying to patch up a squad that's not really his. It'll be nice for him to start shaping the squad himself and really showing what he can do, because I know fans have never really turned on Nigel, but it'd be nice for him to show what he can, back up the reputation that he built at Southampton.
Absolutely, you know, and Nigel deserves a chance to be able to build something here. He came in, I can't even imagine the promises he was given by Anton and TSI when he arrived here. And it's just, you know, it's just all turned into an absolute nightmare for him in terms of what he was promised. You know, nothing materialised. He hasn't been able to sign a player for over 300 days. He's had a couple of players thrown on him, which, you know, they weren't his signings. There's absolutely no way Royston Drennan was ever a Nigel Atkins signing. And so he just deserves a chance, because he's handled himself impeccably, I have to say, during this. A lot of managers could have walked, justifiably walked, because of what's happened to him since he's arrived here. But he's sat it through. He's never criticised, really, as he, when a lot of people would have done. He's just towed the party line. He's always tried to sort of motivate the fans, the players, and looked on the bright side. You know, the mick gets taken out of him an awful lot because of it, because it's all this positivity, attitude, application and all that. But, you know, he's always kept his chin up. And I think he deserves a chance to build. The only slight worry with this whole thing is we know what happens when new owners tend to come in, that managers don't tend to last long. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with Nigel, far from it, because everything I've heard is that these Ties are perfectly happy with Nigel and want to give him the tools to go on and build. But we know what can happen with these owners, certainly volatile owners who, you know, from the Far East, they tend to know what they want. And if they're not given it by one man, they have no problem changing it. So I think we'll have to wait and see. I think we can guarantee it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster ride, I think, in the next year or so. And so it will certainly be interesting to watch.
Well, just before you go, Charles, I just quickly want your overall feeling on this situation about the whole club. Are you on the positive side of the fence or are you on the negative side?
I'm on the positive side of the fence, just but merely because it couldn't carry on as it has been. There was only two ways this club was going in terms of off the field, and it was either a takeover was going to happen or the club was going to have to go into administration, because the current regime couldn't continue to fund it, and there was serious debts that had to be dealt with. And so this needed to happen. Whether it's going to be a good thing in the long term, I have absolutely no idea. Obviously, we've gone from one mysterious group back in the club to another possibly even more mysterious group back in the club. Who do they have money? We don't know. But for me, this had to happen. We've just got to trust now that the club have made the right decision, that I'm sure that they've done all the necessary checks. And after what happened last time, are desperate that something like that won't happen again. So we've just got to put our trust on the powers that be at the top of the club, that they've chosen the right people to take this club forward. And it will be, in the long term, a very good thing. I know they've got ambitions, these ties. I know they're very ambitious. They want to get back to the Premier League. They want to continue to fund the academy, which is absolutely key to Reading because it's such a huge asset. And so for me, I'm very much on the positive side of the fence, but I don't know what's going to happen in the future. We're just going to have to sit back and watch and keep our fingers crossed.
And I can think of no better note to end the podcast on than that nice positive note. But before we let you go, Charles, just quickly, what's coming up on the website and in the paper this week?
Well, obviously we've got the game tomorrow, Swansea. So we've got all the reaction to that, to Guilfi's big return as the club are selling it. And then next week, obviously on Wednesday, we've got our 16-page supplement of the new Championship season supplement. We've got massive interview with Nigel Atkins. We've got interviews with the new skipper, Jem. We've got Chris Gunter in there. We've got Ryan Edwards in there. I think we've got my Championship predictions, see if I can get him as hopelessly wrong as I did last season. Obviously, as I tweeted earlier in the week, we don't have the Meet the New Boys section because we haven't got any new boys to meet. So we've got the ones to watch instead. Plenty in there. So you get the paper on Wednesday, you get the usual Reading stuff, plus 16 pages in the middle pull out. So yeah, I advise everyone to pick up a copy.
Brilliant stuff. Be sure to pick that up on Wednesday. As for thetilehurstend.com, there's plenty of content going up so far this pre-season with lots more to come. We've just done our position preview, so you can look ahead to what we think is going to happen in the goalkeeping, defenders, with the midfielders and the strikers. And stay tuned next week as well, because I've spent my week emailing 23 other Championship bloggers to get their views ahead of the new campaign, so you can see who they're picking out from their own teams and also what they make of Reading as well. It's always one of the more interesting points of our pre-season preview, so be sure to check that out. That's all on rlsn.com. As for us, Charles, hopefully we'll catch up with you before the start of the season and before your long trip up to Wigan.
Yes, it was. Hopefully so. Enjoy the game on Saturday.
Cheers, Charles. Take care.
Tilehurst End Podcast. We the blog on thetilehurstend.com.